To be accepted, to husband. Allow me. I do it personally after being here for 5 years. Really, to congratulate you about two major achievements. But to my opinion, after being here for 5 years, I'm so much impressed with you. First, your victory as a political leader in the last elections. I think I saw what was going on in this country, and I think it's tremendous, tremendous achievement that any political leader anywhere, no doubt in the United States, can be more than proud of. Second, for what you have achieved in terms of dramatic changes, as I see it, in foreign policy, to the Americans, it looks much more in the question of Vietnam. I see it in much more, if I may say, in depth. I tend to believe that it's a kind of a change, the way that I understand it. It's a change that has not taken place since the end of the Second World War. I see in the change in the interrelations between the nation powers that you have brought about. A beginning of new hope for many peoples, not only to the United States. I came to this country in 1968. February 68. I lived to 1968. I came in the middle of that offensive. I watched the famous speech of the late President Johnson. I saw the outcome of the assassination of Martin Luther King, the riots in the city. I thought, allow me to say, Mr. President, I was afraid, as a representative of a small country, that this country might fall apart, and with it, the hope to many countries. I feel the change that has taken place in this country, not only domestic, not only in terms of foreign policy, in the last 5 years, because I came on the verge of this change. I saw the worst and I saw it bring forth the complete change. I would like to thank you in the name of my country, people, for what you have offered us in the last 4 years. First, you offered us the possibility to get the arms that are required for our defense. It's not because I'm a military man. It's because we have learned that without the means, we would not be able to defend ourselves. In our case, the people are ready, capable to do you want small countries to do according to your doctrine, to shoulder upon themselves the defense of their own country. And what we lacked was the means you gave us. And for us, this is the basic, the essence of being able to be alive. Second, Mr. President, your presence, your policies, created a deterrence posture vis-à-vis the Soviets in the Middle East that has prevented, to my opinion, great catastrophes to us in the Middle East. And I'm talking as an Israeli. It might be strange, but two Jewish states in our long history were destroyed. 19 centuries ago and over 2000s. In each time, we were not destroyed by our neighbors. In each time, we were destroyed by a major power of the time, by Babylon, by Rome. And therefore, even though history does not have to repeat itself, it happened to be that the only threat to the existence of Israel, once you have offered us the possibility to purchase arms, presented to Israel in the last years by the amount of fear that the Russians might have felt that they had in using their arms, their forces, directly against us. I believe our readiness to fight even against the Russians was an important factor, but no question that you, yourself, and the way that you conducted the United States affairs everywhere and in the Middle East have created the kind of deterrent posture that the Russians backed out. I think the best example took place in September 1970 when the Jordanian crisis developed. I think it proved then that our readiness and capability on one hand, but your initiative and your posture brought about a kind of change of development that otherwise, who knows what would have happened in the Middle East, not only in Jordan alone, because a change of regime in Jordan could have brought about many repercussions all over the Middle East. For that, Mr. President, we all are very thankful to you because we know they were your decisions and you had to overcome, as I know, many objections within the administration to make them and to make them work. I'm sure that with great satisfaction that I leave here when I can sum up the Israeli-American relations by one word: we have never had it so good. And this is as I leave. When it comes to the future, if you have got a little bit of time, allow me, there are three options in which the Middle East can move. One is resumption of hostilities. Second, to move towards a political settlement, an overall, partial. And three, the status quo will be continued. When it comes to the military option, we have no reason to resume hostilities. It's in the interest of Israel, and we'll try our best to prevent any resumption of hostilities. Israel is not interested, it's our policy. I think I made it clear to Dr. Kissinger that we are not going to initiate any resumption of hostilities, no question along the Suez Canal. It's only they can resume hostilities. They can do it for two purposes. One, to push us from the Suez Canal. I don't believe that even the Egyptians think that they are capable, especially after the Russians are not anymore there. Therefore, the only option for which, or the only reason that can open or resume hostilities, is to use a limited military activity in support of main trust, which is a political. It is to say, to create the tension that would force major powers, Soviet Union as well as the United States, to do something. This is the only reason for which I can see any resumption of hostilities. I doubt if it's imminent, but in the Middle East, it's very difficult to predict what will be the future. When it comes to political options, I doubt if there is a possibility in the Middle East to move, to bring about transition from war to peace as an act. It seems to me that the transition from war to peace in the Middle East should be a process by steps. The conflict is too deeply rooted. The distrust, the mistrust, the lack of confidence requires certain phases that will allow create the kind of confidence that without it, I doubt if there is a possibility. And I talk in mainly between Egypt and Israel. This will be Jordan, it's a different story. Therefore, we still believe at the present, to sum up our position, that the proposal on which we were agreed at the end of 71, the beginning of 72, that the best way is to move by steps, that the interim agreement around the reopening system is still the best way. We tend to believe that the Egyptians will come to a realistic attitude about in which direction to move, as well as the Russians, only when they realize that the other options are blocked, especially the military option. No one, I don't believe that the Russians and the Egyptians would hesitate to use military option if they come to the conclusion that it will serve their purpose. The only way to prevent them from doing so is by blocking it, by strengthening Israel, and by the kind of posture that the United States has presented and presents today in the area. Only when they find that there are no other options, only then they move in the right direction, in the direction on which it has been agreed, of course, in the talks, my little time to come with new ideas. The maintenance of the ceasefire that came about as your initiative and its strengthening by your actions, the end of 71 and through 72, have created a new era in the Middle East that I can't recall. I think even from the United States point of view, you have never had it so good in the Middle East. In terms of moderation, in terms of reluctance to use, to resolve the use of force, in terms of improvement relations between the United States and other countries, like Yemen, Sudan, even radical countries, and making new deals with Algeria. No question that there was a strengthening of the position of the regimes in poor Western America, please. Therefore, I think the policy that we have laid and was carried out till today proved to be at least achieving one result, preventing results. And the mere fact that the war were not hostilities by itself moved the area in the right direction. Therefore, I come to the conclusion that at least we have to achieve the third option, the maintenance of the present situation. If we can move from it to better, to toward interim solution, to step-by-step settlements, toward an overall settlement, it would be the best. But to achieve it, one has to make sure that there will be no military option, that there will be enough strength in the area that they will not be left to be tempted to resume hostilities.
As you should be very close, and I think the problem is complicated by the fact that many people feel that there's a solution here, and they would say, no, that's it, we'll settle it. Neither side is, neither side will agree to a solution that will the other side will accept. So it's a question of going step by step. Of course, you know, the other side says, we're not going to go step by step unless we're sure we're going to go all the way. But I'm inclined to think you are correct that, that the hatreds there, the mistrust is so deep that you're not going to have a magical overall settlement agreed to. Just going to happen. And therefore, we have to find our small ways, but important ways, to lessen stand and where your neighbors stand. In fact, a very, very good description of, that, church of, on the eastern front. Speaking of one of the Austrian, 400 years. He said that he his whole philosophy, was that, not the start of the proposition, that, all men are angels when they start with the proposition. They were the contrary until he had clear evidence that they were not. Now that sounds very negative and very pragmatic and all that sort of thing, and those are bad words in this town in which we live, this international set in which we move and focus it on strength of blood. We don't want to do that because the people of the world want to think that. But for the interest of nations involved, there are people there, and you just got to find a way to have rules so that they don't get to killing each other. That's the way we look at it. So in this case, as you are you well said too, to work for the major powers in the world, you have no problem. But that major power is there. And that major power couldn't care less about you. It cares a great deal about what your neighbors have in the way of resources. And therefore would like to embarrass you for the purpose of creating bounty. Gaining grounding points with them, right? And so there has to be something that balances that major power. That's us at the moment. There's nobody else. The British don't have it anymore. The French don't have it anymore. The Germans can't get it. They would have it if they could. They won't be allowed to. The Italians, of course, have never had it. So who else? So it's us. And so you can count on us in that respect. And we will, however, we will. We should try to find what those small steps are. When I say small steps, you mentioned the things and so forth, and see if we can make some. Because as long as there's just some hope, that may also be a deterrent factor. In addition, just to the uneasy balance, which does exist. But the balance must be maintained, that's for sure. Because only on that balance can we build. Make any change. Without the balance, there's no incentive to change. With the balance, there's an incentive to change to do that. So, there's where we go, and you just go back and you sit back in those nice hills that are up in the Golden Heights looking over the valley and come up with some pretty good idea as to where we move from
here. In Africa, the last area would be the Golden Heights, because we can see it, you know, hope to move whatsoever. They're the craziest.
God, are they crazy?
Yeah, but because till today they maintain the political position that there is no, should be no political settlement, that the war should go on till the destruction. This is their declared policy.
Sure.
At least you know they are fighting.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's much easier to deal with. After all, it's legitimate to have conflicting interests. The problem is how to mitigate conflicting interests in the way to produce a situation that as you described, the president, to lead them to Berkeley. It's not a question of fighting against idealism or...
Right. Well, it's good to have this problem with you, and I'm glad to see you again.
Mr. President, thank you both for your advice. She comes
and have a good trip. Don't get hijacked.
And I know a lot of
people get hijacked. Be sure it's one of your own planes you get blown up. You'll shoot them up.
Thank you.
Well, the main thing is that by hitting it first, getting 90 million people at least got our side across, and most of the jackasses that hit it, you know, it's like the Washington Post, when it's good guy Stern, he's just torches trying to find things that are wrong and all that, raising doubts and so forth. But the average person doesn't get one damn about that.
Mr. President, the average person doesn't understand all these fine points. They know you brought peace on exactly the terms you said. I think we're getting floods of messages now. Heath sent you a very warm one. Pompidou has sent you an ecstatic one. And I think we ought to...
I gave you the instructions now, though, that Pompidou is going to be responding to, but not that the Australian sent a message.
No, no, I sent the list over there.
You did?
Yeah.
And they're ignoring that.
But I do think we ought to have the conference in Paris, Mr. President. We'll be better off with the French in Paris than if we drag the French to Copenhagen, which is the only other possible place.
All right, put it in Paris.
Where there are no communications.
What do we do about Agnew? When do we inform him and when do we send him?
He should leave Sunday.
When should we announce it? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Does he know?
Yeah.
Who's telling
him? I told him. Well, I've told him that he's going. I'm seeing him this afternoon. I think he ought to be out there when they announce my trip to Hanoi so that he can calm them down a bit. And he ought to be back by the time I go out.
You mean another year trip to Hanoi will be announced when he's there?
Yeah.
Then you better tell him before he goes.
Oh, yeah.
About the trip to Hanoi.
Yeah.
That's part of the deal.
He's unbelievable. I must say, the more I feel, the...
Should have seen him at the cabinet meeting yesterday. Good God, he went on the budget. Christ, he takes up the conduits for the Congress.
But he has no sense of obligation to you.
What is it?
He just is thinking of... First of all, he's very petty.